Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, I got my man on, Keith Bliss, Catone and Company, also part of the Bubba Report, and the guy who I need a dictionary when he talks to me, but I love to talk to him anyways. What's up, Keith?
Hey, Bubba, I'll try and keep it monosyllabic for you today.
Okay, now I got the dictionary out again. So Dr. Bliss, let's just go back to last week and analyze what Janet Yellen and the feds said. I heard you talking the day before on BNN and kind of recapping. Yep. What did you think? What does it mean? What did she say, and what does it mean to us?
Well, I think the gobbledygook out of the Fed is getting increasingly deeper at this point in time. They're clearly painted into a corner, in my assessment. They'd like to raise rates. They know that they are far too long in this cycle. When you think about it, Bubba, we've not had an interest rate increase in 9 years. So they need to get that done. There's lots of downstream effects of not having an interest rate environment or a normal interest rate cycle occur along with the business cycle, and too numerous to go into at this point in time. But so that's one thing that they're really thinking about. So they want to do it. The problem that they have, though, is that they are keenly aware that interest rate increases are going to have their own downstream effects, and probably will have a negative effect on the equity market here in the U.S. will have an extraordinarily negative effect on emerging markets as the risk-free rate, if we use the U.S. rate as the risk-free rate, becomes more attractive to the riskier rate in emerging markets, and capital flows out of those countries. And I'm sure Janet Yellen and the other members of the FOMC do not want to be the ones remembered for getting it wrong on the interest rate increases. So the doing nothing in June was no surprise to anybody. Maybe 10% thought that there was an outside chance that they would do that. But I think I expected the tone and the tenor of the press release and the press conference with the chairwoman afterwards to be a little bit more hawkish than it was. So as a result, we've witnessed it. The markets just took off and rallied like no tomorrow, getting back approaching all-time highs in all the major indexes. The Russell 2000, in fact, did set an all-time high. And now the Fed, I think, is in a real quandary here. So I'm not really sure what we're going to see for the remainder of 2015 as it relates to interest rate and monetary policy.
Well, I will say this. I'm going on record. I'm on record. There's no way they raise rates this year. In my opinion, the Fed is totally lost. They have no idea what to do next. It's, you know, it's that textbook mentality of not being able to react and work at what has to happen in a real business. And of course, they're not running a business, but they are manipulating the markets. But so I don't see any rate increase. What do you see going forward? You know, look, we know the economy is not in great shape. I mean, they can tell me and spin all these numbers they want, but the numbers are not as good as they're making them out to be. How do you spin it? What do you say, and what are you thinking? And again, one thing is the economy and the stock market, they don't have anything to do with each other right now.
That is correct, and rarely do they ever. You know, I've told everybody that for years, and as you have, is that do not mistake the stock market performance for what's happening in the real economy and what's happening with people's wages and savings rates and job security and the like. Well, the Fed even said it themselves. If you listen closely and look at it, they come out with a couple of different pieces at these meetings. I think it's every they have six meetings during the year where the chairman or chairwoman, in this case, Janet Yellen, has a press conference afterwards. And at those meetings, they also give all the FOMC members give their economic projections. Well, as a group in aggregate, they've now lowered their GDP estimates for 2015 down to 1.8%. And that's down from 3.2% last December to 2.4% or something like that in March. So they're just steadily coming down, which is in lockstep with the IMF and the World Bank. And now we can understand if all the listeners remember, the IMF and the World Bank have been imploring the U.S. Federal Reserve not to raise rates in 2015, and now you can understand why. So, yeah, I mean, I've said this before on your show. I used to work with an old fundamental analyst years ago. He was a great guy, and he and I used to talk a lot about it, and we coined the phrase, look out the window fundamental analysis. And what that means is just simply look at your world and see what's going on. I do see in my little slice of the world in New Jersey, I do see the labor economy improving. I do, when I talk to friends and colleagues and associates and anybody who will listen to me blather on about things, I ask them how they're feeling about their job and their job security. That's good. The thing that's not good is nobody is getting raises and nobody has more money in their pocket, while our costs and our expenses in the form of taxes, and there is inflation in the economy. There's no denying that. There are things that cost more than they did a year ago. So those are the things that have people frustrated and really anxious about what's going forward. And while people are anxious, you're not going to see any great growth in the economy because they're going to hold on to their dollars. They're not going to spend them. No matter how much the Fed keeps rates low and tries to implore us to spend our dollars. So those are really the broken linkages that you see in the economy, and that's why the economy is not performing where it should.
You know, I mean, I look at it, and again, we can talk about numbers, but, you know, if you go back to 1987, the average wage was $27,000 per family. Now it's $54,000. So we've doubled. But in the meantime, the deficit is gone up by 14 times. Warren Buffett's net worth has gone up by 20 times. So the average guy is still in the same spot, and basically in quicksand, and I don't see him coming out anytime soon. Do you see a move on the horizon that would say to you, hey, I do see light at the end of the tunnel?
No, I don't at this point in time, and that's the real shame. And by the way, those numbers that you just decided, which is really starting to creep into the conversation about disparity of income and where it's gone, that's really accelerated in the last 7 years. Those wide divergences between the average U.S. family and then the people at the very top, like Warren Buffett and his cohorts. And I don't see it changing anytime soon, and part of the reason that I don't see it changing is Fed monetary policy and fiscal policy in this country. It's not going to drive more income down into the middle class, if we were to break the socioeconomic groups in this country into five categories, 20 percentiles all the way through. The three middle percentiles from 20% up to 80% are not going to see great wage gains anytime soon. The lower 20% will, in the form of transfer payments from the government, and then the upper 20% will, and maybe even you need to go higher than that, they'll see it from increased wealth due to asset appreciation, and maybe they get lucky, they get, because they're able to maneuver through deals that would pay them more money. But it's really that middle 60% of the population that we need to be concerned about, because they're the ones that have to provide the tax base going forward to take care of all the retirees that are now starting to go into retirement. And the other problem that you have with regard to economic growth and where income distribution goes is we've unfortunately fallen into a trap in our capitalistic system with the way public companies now operate. Public companies for the last 20 years have been slaves to Wall Street. They strictly try to perform from quarter to quarter. They do not do a lot of real investment inside of their neighborhoods, so to speak. And that has also led to stagnant wages, stagnant job growth, stagnant job opportunities. And those are some of the things that need to change. But I think it really needs to start with getting our heads wrapped around proper monetary and fiscal policy.
Hold that thought. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. I'm talking with my man, my partner, Keith Bliss, who's also not only is the vice president of the Katona Company, not only is he seen on Fox and CNBC and BNN and every other place he can get himself onto, but he is a big part of the Bubba Report. He does write a View from the Floor. Make sure you check it out. And if you're not getting the Bubba Report, you're making a mistake. It's by far the best financial document out there. $99 a year gets it to you. All you have to do is go to thebubbashow.org and click on the Bubba Report, and it's yours. It'll be delivered to you immediately. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my man Keith Bliss, Katona Company, part of The Bubba Report, seen as seen on TV. All right, so go ahead and continue, sir.
Well, all I was making the point, I was wrapping up my point in that there are lots of things that need to be done both on the monetary policy side and the fiscal policy side in this country. And with fiscal policy, I'm not talking about increasing taxes. I'm talking about having a logical plan for both spending and taxes, which is seemingly, you and I talk about this all the time, we're confused and frustrated quite a lot by our elected leaders in Washington don't seem to understand the first thing about economics or real life business microeconomics. So I'm not sure we're ever going to see a rational fiscal policy out of Washington. But until we get those things, it's going to be hard to break the cycles that we're in right now, which are driving income into places that are not going to really help the most dynamic part of our society and our economy, which is that middle 60% of our population.
Right. And without them, I mean, here's my theory, and let me run this by you. Okay. Now, the rich, they never really change, right? The rich are the rich. They're going to buy new cars. They're going to go out and buy the clothes. They're going to go to Tiffany's. They're going to go, you know, wherever they want to go. They're going to buy homes and so on and so forth. And I'm not talking about the guys that are rich on paper. I'm talking about, you know, the Warren Buffett type of wealth that's got real hard assets and real money. And the poor, the entitled, they don't change. Their life never changes. They take the check from the government and they do their thing. Whatever they do with it, and they spend every dime that they possibly get. But the real drivers of every economy is the middle class. And without the middle class being able to really participate, you're not going to see any real growth, which means that we're not going to see any real jobs because corporations don't have any need to put people to work.
That's absolutely correct. And one of the things, another very good friend of mine who's an analyst for home builders and all things related around housing, he said to me years ago, and it resonated with me, it stuck with me all these years, and probably will until the day I die, but he said, in the U.S. economy, the center of everything, the nexus of everything is housing. Housing starts with everything. And he's right when you think about it. And I'm not just talking about plowing land, you know, improving land, swinging a hammer to frame out a house. I'm talking about all the sub-industries and everything that goes around housing. And so the reason I bring that up is one of the biggest problems that we faced in the last 10 years is, and this is a problem going forward with being able to pay for all the entitlement programs that we're going to have as our population continues to age. But one of the biggest problems we've had in the last 10 years is the lack of household creation. And household creation is loosely defined as, you know, a person or two people go and buy a house, not rent a property, but actually buy a house or some sort of place to live, but they purchase it. And we're not seeing that a lot. We're not seeing that a lot for lots of things. People are nervous about the economy. People are saddled with debt. Many times it's student debt as they come out of college and they simply can't afford to buy a house. So that's another structural problem that we're going to have here. And until we are able to overcome that core structural problem there, amongst others, I predict we're going to see the economy limp along for a long time. So the point I'm making is there's several structural problems inside of the economy, some monetary policy driven by the Fed, some fiscal policy driven by the government, some debt driven by the way our society has channeled its resources into certain places. And it may take several years for those things to iron themselves out, and therefore we'll see really lackluster growth, lackluster wage growth, and a lackluster labor market for some time.
Right. And now, as we look at the Federal Reserve, you know, I call them a legalized Ponzi scheme. And based on the letter of the law, they actually are, because they're actually putting money out to on hopes that they get future taxes or whatever, and things come out. Now, when we look at the whole picture and we see what's going on, you've got a situation that the Fed is now leveraged at 75-1. Now, don't you see that as a potential problem?
Yes, because ultimately what has to happen, the entity that covers that leverage is the U.S. government, by the way it's structured. Here's another curious point that your listeners probably don't realize, is that I think the U.S. government is actually painting themselves in a corner with the way the Fed has ballooned at their balance sheet, because all the interest payments and all the other income that comes off of that, they actually return to the U.S. Treasury. So it's one of the income, it's one of the revenue sources that the U.S. Treasury gets by printing all this money, by establishing greater debt, by allowing the Fed to put it out into the economy. So any of the revenue streams that come off of that capital then gets channeled back into the U.S. government, which they account for as a source of revenue along with tax receipts. Think about a world where they actually reduce the leverage inside of the Fed's balance sheet and that income stream goes away. It creates a bit of a hole in the government budget. So, but back to your original point on the Fed, yes. I mean, at some point they're going to have to reabsorb that. They're going to, all that money that they put out, they're going to have to deleverage in some way. This is another thing I think they're very concerned about when it comes to actual timing of interest rates and how they do it. It's a part of the puzzle that they've got to sort out. And we've now gotten ourselves into a situation, and it's, again, that's going to be something that is going to be and needs to be a very long time before they can unwind all that leverage that they have on there.
So, you know, as we look and we look ahead into the future, and we see what's going on, we both know there's going to be a meltdown in the market at some point. And again, that doesn't mean that long term it's not going to continue to go up, because the markets, you know, over time do go up time year after year, but not every year. I mean, just there'll be an increase. But I look around and I go, okay, so are we being trapped by all the M&A activity and things like that? Is that a concern?
I don't think the M&A activity that's going on is a concern in and of itself, but what it does to the frothiness of the stock market is something we have to keep an eye on. So I think you're now bordering upon a point which is lost on a lot of people as well, is how has the stock market, if we have a slow growth economy and we have companies that are, as we saw in the first quarter earnings report, missing their numbers on both sales as well as bottom line reports, and why does the equity market keep going up? And the equity market keeps going up for a few reasons. One of them is having to do with M&A activity, for sure. And M&A activity happens when, for two reasons, when you have cheap money that you can borrow, which companies do, or you have a stock price which you can use as your currency, and the transaction is priced at an all-time high or high levels. We're seeing both of those things happen right now. So the mere fact that companies are merging doesn't bother me. I think all industries go through a period of expansion and then consolidation and contraction and need to. We're seeing that in healthcare right now. We'll see that in the cable and wireless industries. We're certainly seeing that in the oil and gas industry out of necessity. But then there's periods of time where the market gets frothy, and mergers and acquisitions start to happen in a bit of a frenzy. I don't think we're at that point yet. And typically you see when you see stupid deals being done for outsized valuations, you know you're at the end of an M&A cycle. I don't think we're there yet. But certainly the M&A is adding to, excuse me, the appreciation inside of the equity market right now, as opposed to good old fundamentals.
And speaking of good old fundamentals, what is your projection or target of when we might see some real fundamentals?
I have no idea at this point in time. Listen, if companies, here's another point about the stock market and rising prices that is lost on a lot of people. Oftentimes, stock prices will go up because companies are able to borrow cheap money and then initiate these massive billion-dollar stock buybacks. And stock buybacks have the effect of doing two things, which are both beneficial to a company and to shareholders. The first one, of course, is that as you have more demand entering the market for a particular issue, obviously the price has to go up. So if they're coming in, they're buying, they're just bidding the stock up. That's the first benefit that it gives to a company. The second benefit, then, is as it reports on the fundamental side of the picture, as it reports its quarterly earnings, because when you do a buyback, you take out a certain percentage of the shares outstanding, and therefore, when you do the calculation on earnings per share, you have, all things being equal, if you had the same amount of earnings, but you had less shares, you'd have a higher earnings per share number. So that's the second reason that you see companies doing stock buybacks, because they're not able to grow their businesses on the top line, but yet they need to perform against the analysts' estimates on the bottom line.
Or the analyst, which we'll pick up back after we come back to the break. I'm with Keith Bliss, Vice President of Katone & Company, also a partner in the Bubba Report, and also a frequent contributor to CNBC, Fox, BNN, and many others. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Keith Bliss. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my man Keith Bliss, Vice President, Katone & Company, but more importantly, my partner and a friend and part of the Bubba Report. All right, so give us the summation of what we're going on now. Get us out of this mess, will you, please?
What are you talking about? Everything?
Well, you were finishing your point about where we were going, and
So from a fundamental standpoint, I firmly believe in being down here on the floor and having the opportunity of talking to companies and understanding their businesses, not only companies that go public, but you know, any of the issued companies that list their stocks on the New York Stock Exchange when they come down. When available and when possible, I'll go have a conversation with them about their business, their practices, their fundamentals. And my firm belief is that all companies are trying to do what they can. Their first order of responsibilities to the shareholder. They must create value for the shareholder. The second is then to their employees and society. And if you talk to these guys, and I've become a pretty good BS reader over the years. When you talk to these guys, I think they're sincere on that point. But they also recognize that they have a challenging environment ahead of them, which needs to be sorted out. And it's not of their doing. I mean, the challenging environment is now global in nature with regard to governmental policies, central bank policies, regulatory policies, tax policies that they're now trying to wade through. So I'm not sure we get back to, you know, kind of the sweet spot of being able to evaluate a company strictly on its business fundamentals, its business practices, its management capability, how many employees it can hire, how it can compensate those employees, all the things that we know and love to look at. I'm not sure we get back to that for several years. There's got to be a lot of changes that happen, both in terms of governmental policy, regulation, central bank policy, all the like. And until those things get unwound and we can just actually let a free-flowing economy happen, you know, we can't even really discuss fundamentals. We're always going to be talking about these external things that impact companies.
All right, last question about monkey business is, does Greece mean anything to you? Does it mean anything to the market? If so, why?
It means a lot to me, and I'm actually surprised. I've heard some people say it's meaningless. I completely and utterly disagree with that. I've described Greece to people as the germ on the gnat on the rump of an elephant, and it is in Europe when it comes to both the amount of GDP and the population that Greece has. But here's the problem that you have with Greece. There's two main problems that you have with Greece. Number one is, actually three. I'm going to say three. The first one is that if Greece were to default on its debt, the first thing that would happen is it would be in violation of the Maastricht Treaty, which is the massive treaty which set up the euro, the common currency euro, back in 1992. So therefore, they would probably be ejected from the euro group. And as a result, they would also be shut out from the capital markets. Greece simply cannot pay their debts without assistance. We know this. They don't have enough money. The central Greek government could confiscate every drachma from every Greek citizen, and they simply would not have enough money to pay their debts. If they're shut out from the capital markets and they have no way to feed their citizenry, that will create chaos, and you could potentially have a failed state. That's the first problem. Nobody wants to see that. And nobody can predict what would happen as a result of that. The second problem, if they were to exit, then my suspicion is that if they did exit and went smoother than what I just proposed, the second problem is I think that would set a template for countries like Spain, Portugal, Ireland, perhaps some others that are stronger but really don't like the situation that they're in with the common currency. That would set a template for them to also potentially exit. And then what happens is if you have this total and massive collapse of the euro, then the third problem you have is the interlinkages between all the various world economies and the interlinkages with all the asset trades and swap trades that you have going on with the euro and other currencies and other assets denominated in euros and dollars and yen and Aussie dollar, whatever you want, all those would have to be unwound and unwound quickly. Where people are setting prices just to get out of the trades. That will create, I believe, confusion, volatility, and chaos in the asset markets like we've never seen before. So I totally and utterly disagree with someone who says it's not going to matter. We don't know if it's going to matter or not, and it's impossible to game this out in a professional way. We just cannot understand all the potential ramifications of their exit. Therefore, I think they need to do everything they can to at least stave this off and give themselves, if there is going to be an exit, give themselves enough time to make it an orderly removal or ejection from the Eurogroup as opposed to a knee-jerk reaction because they miss an IMF payment.
All right, because I'm one of that says Greece doesn't mean a lot, with the exception, here's my theory. Merkel would love to throw them out on her ass, except that just with the things you mentioned, she's worried about the template of Spain, Portugal, and Italy, because in Greece, on its own, if they had no other ramifications, they really create nothing. They're like the state of Indiana as far as GDP is concerned, but the fact of everybody else could cause the problem. So we're in agreement there. But let's get into... We've got about a segment and a half left, but I really want to talk about and start with financial literacy. You know, I think that, you know, adults themselves, we don't have a lot of financial literacy in this country, and we really get lost in what's going on and the importance of understanding what you're actually involved in. What do you think?
I agree with you 100%. I mean, and again, go back to my earlier comment, look out the window fundamentals. Part of that looking out the window fundamentals to me is having conversations with people about what they know about the markets, what they know about monetary policy, what they know about money and banking, what they know about, you know, international trade. And the knowledge on people is very, the knowledge that people contain is very little. You know, these are things that you and I take for granted every day because we live them, we have to know them, we use them. But it's almost frightening to me at the lack of literacy from those things that I cited, which are fairly complex, you know, if you were to lay them out on the scale of all things financial, but also the lack of literacy that people have, and just how a bank works. You know, what is a bank there to do? It's not just about deposits and allowing you to issue checks on those deposits. It does so much more, and are vital to our economic vitality. So yeah, I mean, we've got to be able to do something to change the curve on that, so that future generations coming up have a really good understanding about how all the economic fundamentals and linkages work, so that they can feel more comfortable when they see things in the news, and they can understand why things happen, so that they can prepare themselves for their own future.
And I mean, I think that is important, because, you know, even like I said, we're not telling you to self-direct your own money. We're just saying, hey, know what your guy or your gal or whoever is taking care of your money, what they're doing with it, so you have an understanding, so one day you don't wake up with a surprise. You know, you wake up when you're, you know, 65 and want to retire, and you go, oh, what happened? And where am I at? And isn't that one of the most important things you can tell somebody?
Yeah, I don't manage my own money. I don't. That's not what I do, and I don't have the time to do it. And it requires time, and it requires a different skill set than I possess. I suppose if I was retired and I had the time to tinker with it, I could do it, but quite candidly, I'm not that interested in it. So I let a very good friend of mine, I've known him for years, trust him, which is important. I give him the ability with discretion to manage my IRA and college investments and some other things that I have, and he has at it. But your point is well taken, is that I know enough that I make sure I check my statements every month, and he and I can have a worthwhile conversation about what he's doing and what's in the statements, and I know enough to ask the right questions. And that's really the important point.
And that's exactly my point. I mean, you know, like I said, I don't manage my long-term portfolio. I don't manage it either. I mean, I have it, you know, with somebody that I trust and a good money man. But, you know, you bet your ass that I'm looking at what's going on, because certainly, you know, nobody ever wants to be surprised by that investment that you didn't know about. So all we're saying when it comes to this is to make sure that you have an understanding. And that's what, you know, some of the things that we do in the Bubba Report, it's to make you understand what's going on, whether you're doing some of your own investing, whether somebody's doing it for you. Because, again, we've seen, and I don't want to go to the other extreme, but, you know, we've seen Bernie Madoff. But you know how many Bernie Madoff stories there are in the world without Bernie Madoff? I mean, you know how many little guys that have stolen, you know, $1 million here, $500,000 there from people that gave them ultimate trust without ever checking what they do? And I think that's one of the most important things. You agreed?
Yeah, it seems like there's one a week. In fact, there was a story I was just reading a story yesterday. Tim Duncan, the basketball player who's getting on in years, you know, there's always speculation. There was last year. There's speculation this year about him retiring. And one of the things that they cited about him not retiring is that he had an investment advisor who just stole $25 million from him. And just really sad story, and he may not be able to retire as a result. But to your point, this was a guy that he thought he trusted, but he didn't know enough to ask the questions. He trusted him totally, and he ended up losing $25 million. So you got it. But if Tim Duncan, and I have no idea whether he has a high financial IQ or a low financial IQ, but I'm going to assume, let's assume maybe he's middle of the road, but he probably didn't know enough to ask the right questions and have a worthwhile conversation with his investment advisor, which may have uncovered the impropriety that was going on.
Absolutely. And that you always will be able to uncover it if you're paying attention and watching. And if you're seeing things, look, one thing we both know, and we'll talk about more of this when we come back from the break, but if it looks too good to be true, it probably is, because there ain't nobody giving anything out for free here. I'm with my man, Keith Bliss, Catone & Company, but also a key contributor to the Bubba Report, as well as a partner, a Trader's View from the Floor. Make sure you check it out. And if you're not getting it, you better go to the Bubba Show right now, thebubbashow.org, and sign up for it. $99 a year. Get you a minimum of 12 issues. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. The
song was written by Fred Ebb and John Kander.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz hanging out with my man Keith Bliss, Catone & Company, Vice President, as seen on TV. He's like a commercial. CNBC, Fox, you know, just everywhere. But also a key contributor to the Bubba Report, as well as a partner. So, Keith, we're talking a little financial literacy, and I want to take it down to the high school years. You know, you and I are working on a program together and putting together a curriculum for high schools. And how important it would have been for you, and maybe you had it, but how important is it to you, would it have been to understand more about finance when you were 16, 17 years old?
Eminently more important. And I'll tell you the story. So I was blessed to be in a high school at that time, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, that had a pretty expansive business curriculum. And it wasn't just, you know, learning how to type and other things. And also remember at that time, we didn't have all the fancy gadgets and gizmos that we have today, which take care of a lot of that stuff for us. So we really had to learn fundamentally, you know, debits, credits, accounting, you know, how to calculate interest payments on a mortgage, those sorts of things. And I really enjoyed that curriculum. I enjoyed it a lot. And the class that I really enjoyed was accounting. And it was just your basic accounting class. You know, if you ran a business, how to keep track of your finances, make payroll, you know, pay the bills, taxes, all that. But it was so important to know or have a baseline understanding of what companies need to look at. Now, I wish that we had had, to your point, I wish we'd had more classes along those lines. And starting from the very basics, you know, like I mentioned earlier in the show, the basics, you know, what does a bank do? Why are they there? Not just there to take deposits and write checks. I wish we had classes like that, going all the way through to having a baseline understanding of the financial markets. And the financial markets, of course, were not as complex as they are today. They weren't not as interconnected. They weren't as voluminous as they are today. Back then you had three main stock exchanges in the U.S. We now have 13 stock exchanges in the U.S. So it's gotten more complex. So even not getting an understanding, you know, 35 years ago, it must be even more daunting as a high school student looking today and trying to understand all that's going on. And I'll just complete my thought on this is that, so then when I went to college at Rutgers, I had back then in the mid-80s, Wall Street was really booming at that point in time. We'd read the stories. Rutgers, for anybody who doesn't know it, is about halfway in between New York and Philadelphia. So me and my friends, we all had a ambition to go to work on Wall Street. But even in college, we didn't really understand what that meant. They don't teach you how the financial markets work. They teach you modern portfolio theory out of a textbook, but they don't teach you how stock trades. And again, it's nice to be able to evaluate a company and be able to figure out where you think the stock price is worth based upon the P&L of the company, but it's also highly valuable to understand what happens when that ownership of that company gets traded in the secondary market and what people do with it and why they own it and why they trade it.
And I couldn't agree. I mean, again, that's one of the things behind the highschoolinvesting.com is that we believe that, you know, everybody needs to know, because, you know, there's a big push now. You hear the advertising for your credit score. Well, you know, your credit score does have to do with your finances, because it does actually affect the amount that you have to pay for a loan. Most people don't even understand that. And it's, yep, you know, all these things that we do throughout your life, you have to understand what is a good investment. What should you be investing in when you're younger versus when you're older? I mean, those are all things that are important to people as well, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's all part of a big puzzle, and I think by and large, and one of the things that I'm really happy working with you on that we want to do is, I think Wall Street by and large over the years has done a terrible job at educating the broader public about what all these things mean and why they're used. And I also know, not to sound cynical, I also know Wall Street has done that on purpose in many cases, so that they can charge higher fees and, you know, keep control of the conversation. But it's long overdue that people have a baseline understanding of how these things work. It will help them plan for the future. And it will also, I believe, will also help Wall Street by making people not so suspicious of what Wall Street is about and what they do and why we're here. It's vitally important to any economy in the world, any capitalist economy in the world, that you have a vibrant financial market that's open and honest, follows the rules, and tries to do right by the customers. And you don't get to that ultimate nirvana in this industry unless you have a customer base that is highly educated in what they're buying.
I couldn't agree. And again, liquid markets is another point. But, you know, there's so many different ways, you know, there's markets that trade. You know, listen, half of the stuff trades in the secondary market now. I mean, you know, everybody worries about, you know, for example, I bet you Facebook, you know, everybody talks about the net worth of Zuckerberg, but he made more of his money selling off a lot of his stock in the secondary market before they ever went public. So, you know, that's the dark pool, things like that. Those are things that people just don't understand, and it happens all the time, does it not?
Well, that's true, and that's to my point that, you know, when I was learning about financial markets, what limited exposure I was getting 30, 35 years ago, the markets have gotten increasingly more complex. So now it takes a real good curriculum, a real good program, a real good for people to have a real good understanding of how these things work. And again, it's all about not necessarily steering somebody to go work in the financial markets. God, if we all worked in the financial markets, then our economy would really come to a standstill. But to just understand what's going on and how these things are created and what they're there for. And you're right. It's much more complex today. And that's why a good program like High School Investing is there to help people understand what's going on.
And so if you were to tell a young girl first, what's the first thing you tell them to understand?
Well, the first thing I tell them, because I come from this background, is two things. First off, get a baseline understanding of just how an economy works. And there's several tools and applications and books, and I know this will be a part of the program of High School Investing, is just to understand, you know, what does supply and demand mean? Why do companies make decisions within a macro and a microeconomic environment? And then the second thing, which I think is very important, this probably comes from my background being a banker, is have a very good understanding of money and banking. Why is it there? What does it mean? Why do banks operate? How does the Federal Reserve, how do they actually move interest rates up and down? What's the mechanism that they do that for? Why do they do it? And once you get those fundamental underpinnings and understanding, and I've talked to lots and lots of people and explained to them what the Fed does and why they do it, and you can almost see a light bulb click on, then it makes everything else eminently more understandable, because then they can see or they can hear when Janet Yellen gets up in front of the microphones and she says certain things. They understand it, and they then can understand what the downstream ramifications of her statements will be. So you got to build that baseline foundation inside of a person's intellect before they can then really understand the more complex things inside of our markets.
And again, those are all things that are just, you know, so important. And I'm so glad that that we hooked up and got this thing going, because, you know, I believe that you and I and our group have a chance to really revolutionize the financial literacy and really get to the people when they're young. I mean, it won't help me anymore. I'm too old for that. But, you know, certainly it'll help us and, you know, your kids, my kids and kids from beyond that, future generations. I mean, if we can get them to understand it, I think we're going to be in the right step and really set something forward to benefit everybody. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
Anyways, this has been my man, Keith Bliss, and you know, he always brings interesting light. He's a I haven't been able to get to all the words he gave me today, but I'm always increasing my vocabulary when he's on with me. But you got to catch him. He's on BNN if you're in Canada, and he does CNBC and Fox all the time, as well as a million other hits. But he is with Catone & Company, the vice president, and he is a key contributor and a partner of the Bubba Report. And make sure that you check out the Bubba Report, because I'm telling you, this is probably the best financial publication, because we're not selling anything. We're just giving you general ideas of what the markets are going to do and let you make your decision based on real information from traders that have a basic understanding. Anyways, Keith, you're awesome, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Bubba. It's always good to be on with you.
This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same station. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.